Welcome to ITAD Talk and part two in this series. Here is your host, Jeff Bittner.
Hey, one of the things that you'd mentioned when we were at the ITAD Summit show last month is you were talking about mentoring, and I was wondering if you could maybe tell us about how relationships with colleagues have impacted the success that you and your business have had.
I owe so many people so much in our learning curve on this business. It started very early on. I can tell you that initially a lot of my mentors in the space were actually our clients. We were a bootstrap company. We were fortunate. What made us get traction fairly quickly is we had large corporate experience, and so we could relate with people in large corporations that are trying to, you know, dispose of these assets and have boxes to check like EH&S and so forth. And we understood how those politics worked, but we really didn't know how to dispose of assets. We were learning on the fly. And I can remember a couple of mentors that were at these companies. They enjoyed working with us because we understood some of the problems they were having. You know, the quality managers was concerned about this. The IT manager was concerned about data. The purchasing guy had some concerns. But then they would come to us and say, hey, other companies we've seen in this space do this, or they do that, or wow, this is something nobody's ever done before. This is really great. And were mentors to us in improving our service to them. So it made their job even easier, but helped us advance our company and the service we were providing. One of the fundamental things that we learned in that phase was this business wasn't about hardware. It's about service and what service you're supplying to these large corporate entities. And then, we learned a lot from our customers. We, at that time frame, one of our big product lines were modems, something that, nobody even thinks about anymore in the day of Wi-Fi, but used to be you had to plug your computer into a modem to talk to the internet. And we did a lot of enterprise modems. The fact that 1,200 baud seemed like a good modem is laughable today. one of my favorite stories was I was new to this and had left TI, and I'm trying to sell this product to a gentleman. And he's asking me about the features, and I'm an engineer, and I'm looking at this thing, and I'm trying to figure out, he's asking about this and this particular spec. And, he eventually very kindly said, you are not actually looking at the right product. And I realized that I picked up the wrong thing, and I was so unfamiliar with it. I was looking at a different type of router type product instead of a modem, even my engineering, aside. And he walked me through it, and he said, hey, when you're looking at these, look for this, look for that. If you want to know the ones that we're most interested in, it's best to look at the rack that they're in and if it's this type of rack. And we learned a ton from them, and it made, it was better for them because we didn't ship them the wrong product. But it was important to us because we seemed so much more educated when we went to our clients to pick up equipment. And then finally, as the industry's matured, peers in the industry such as Reich and George Hinkle at Arcoa and just countless people that, through ISRI, the electronics division, all the way back to IAER, which was the precursor to the electronics division, being able to call somebody up and say, man, I'm really having a hard time, hiring right now. What's it like at your place? And, we're having a hard time too. And what are you doing? Well, we think we're going to have to raise wages. We think that's just the environment. And it's like, yeah, we think we're going to have to do this. So we're not crazy, right? This is the right thing to do, one other thing I'll mention along those lines, we made a decision, it almost has to be 10 years ago now, to establish a formal board of directors for our company. And I can tell you, it's one of the better decisions we ever made for our company. We brought in three outside directors, didn't have experience in the industry, but were business people mostly that had been very, very successful in their career. And honestly, they were people that were at the stage that they wanted to give back. And they've been tremendous mentors to me just as a businessman in, you know, just analyzing the dynamics of this industry and, you know, is it time to raise capital? We recently acquired another company, and going through that process and making that decision in a in an educated and sound way, they've been invaluable to me.
So just a question on that. And like, so the board of directors, so I'm guessing since you own the company, they're probably not stockholders. So you just kind of give them some sort of like a payment on a quarterly basis or something to be part of the board of directors?
You can do both. We've chosen the former for now. We might change that. Actually, I own another company related to this space, and in that company, they do have, there are also some of the directors that participate in that, and they do have a stake in that company.
Okay.
But yeah, you can do both. I think if you, you know, as I analyze it, if you are going to be aggressive in capital raise and acquisitions, I think I would want them to maybe have a stake in that game. As you analyze those decisions, you know, maybe have a little skin in the game. The type of gentleman that I was able to bring on here, that wasn't really necessary. They were bought in from the start. Like I said, they were all successful businessmen that I think were actually found being a mentor to somebody as hard-headed and ignorant in many areas as me was rewarding to them because they saw a lot of improvement quickly. And, you know, my sister and I, one of the things of being a family-run business is you were both raised in the same house under the same principles. And it's been important to us because it's easy for us to have groupthink, right? We were fairly close. We had a great family, great parents. And so we tend to think a lot alike on a lot of aspects, and bringing in outside directors, you know, brought in a completely different point of view. For instance, doing an acquisition, we're very conservative, and that would have been a difficult decision to get over as conservative as we are. But with those outside directors, they walked us through the evaluation and we felt confident in it.
Wow. That's very neat. Well, that sounds like, it was really important to have those, you know, board of directors that could help you to navigate through that.
Yeah, I mean, there's the old adage that one of the loneliest places and positions in the world is the owner of a small company, right?
Yeah.
All the challenges of a big company, you face every single issue, but then you often don't have the decision-making infrastructure that a big company has.
Right. It was funny, you know, how we're talking about mentoring and everything. When I was at the ITED Summit show, I was talking to one of the guys there, and he'd actually been my second boss in electronics, you know, back in the late 1980s. And now his company has like 22 employees. But I heard this voice come from the back of me, Jeff Bittner. I was like, is that Jeff Bittner? And I was like, oh, I must have pissed him off, right? And so I turn around and I can't quite place his face, and he tells me his name is Scott Levin. And so when we used to do electronic assembly, he was the delivery driver that would bring over the memory chips, and, you know, our pick and place machines would mount them on the boards, and then we'd test the modules and get them back to his company. And I would always talk to him and spend time with him. And then in another loud booming voice, he goes, Jeff Bittner taught me the business. And I had brought him over and showed him how to remove the capacitors and resistors. At that time, on some of the memory modules, if you changed the resistor setting, they would work on different systems. So you could sell them in a different application. And of course, the market needs were always changing. And so, you know, fast forward, he owns the packaging company that does sells the plastic trays for the processors and the hard drive boxes and stuff like that. And he got a couple of companies and a big house in Orange County. But it was just neat that, you know, because sometimes you don't think you have an impact on people, but it was so nice to have that experience to see that, you know, I had an impact on his life. So it was neat.
Well, we're really fortunate to be in an industry that's still small and growing. You know, there's a lot of industries out there. I have a guy working for me that used to work for one of the big telecom companies. And, you know, they would talk about that they were constantly on the lookout for the competitor, you know, coming by and, you know, make sure we don't say anything. In fact, they would, if they were at one of the big shows, they came into their booth, they had security there to tell them to leave, you know. And, you know, this is the type of industry that's still growing, still maturing. And you can take the attitude that, look, if we all get better, you know, if the water level goes up, it raises all the boats. And, you know, as we get better, each individual company and mature this industry, we will all benefit from that. And, you know, take it from an afterthought to a major part of the circular economy infrastructure, which is what we really are. You know, we have massive international organizations studying, you know, how do we make the economy more circular? How do we, you know, make, solve these massive problems with this proliferation of electronics throughout the entire ecosystem in the economy? And we are a major part of that solution, bringing things back, retesting them, reusing them, injecting them back into active service, or making sure those that can't be are properly disposed of. And, you know, the more people recognize the industry and the importance of this, the more opportunities we have to, you know, do things like charge when we need to charge, and they see value in the service that we're providing.
Yeah, you know, another question I want to ask you is, how important is the international trade to the ITAD industry?
Well, you know, in my opinion, it's very important, especially in mobility. You know, there's two aspects to the international trade. One is electronics are international products and demand varies. And so, for instance, we sell a lot to direct to consumer. Google phones are not near as popular in the U.S. as they are in other parts of the world. And we can get a premium for those devices internationally. In order for us to be competitive, we really need to be able to sell to the markets where there's the greatest demand. Second is, there's many, many, many parts of the world that, you know, a phone or a tablet or a laptop is the difference between economic advancement and economic stagnation for individuals. And we have those coming out of service, perfectly functioning, you know, by the tens of, and hundreds of thousands. And being able to drive those to markets where the demand is critical for the industry worldwide. You know, we live in a world where you don't examine economies at a state level, a country level. You examine economic dynamics at a global level now, and that applies certainly to the electronics industry. And I think it's important for companies in this space to understand that dynamic, whether you are selling internationally or not. You know, you may sell, you know, Google Pixels to me, but I'm not selling Google Pixels in Dallas, Texas. I'm selling Google Pixels in Paris, France, and because that's where demand is great. And so our ability to be competitive isn't important, is impacted by our ability to have access to international markets. And I think, you know, people need to be aware of when there's pressure that might impact those international markets, like what's happening at the Basel Convention right now.
Yeah, that kind of what you're saying kind of went along with the second part of the question, which is how does it impact the sustainability as well as the financial return for clients? And so I think that's kind of what you were getting at is that there's a world market out there and one market may pay a good price for something, whereas maybe our market, there's no demand for those products, right?
Exactly, exactly. You know, we follow the three R's. Reuse is the first one. And if there's demand for specific products at specific locations, you know, we can't reuse them unless we have access to those markets. So, yeah, free and fair trade of, you know, working electronics products, you know, is a very important aspect for the long-term sustainability of the electronics industry.
So I've got one more question for you. So as you look in your crystal ball to see the future, what sort of issues will impact ITAD services, electronics reuse and recycling, and the technology in general?
Wow, so I'm the wrong guy to ask crystal ball questions to. My famous club was I told a big convention once that, you know, someday all the phones are going to be tiny and you won't hardly know they're in your pocket. Now we all carry around tablet-sized phones in our pocket. I was all worried about the amount of material that was going to be in the device because it was going to be so small. You know, so I'll give you my perspective, but I would take it with a grain of salt. I would encourage, we are having a meeting next week. The ISRI roundtables are next week. And I'll be interviewing Walter Alcorn of the CTA, and he's much more qualified to answer this question than I am. But I think, you know, as we look at the dynamics of the industry now, and there's a couple of factors really affecting the industry. One is I think we are seeing a shift in workforce dynamics as people do decide that they want to work from home. If you look at the Great Resignation, you know, a lot of that is people enjoying working from home and wanting to keep that environment. And I think companies are recognizing that. I think if you look at, you know, just how expensive office space is and the savings they can get from moving people to their home.
Right.
And what the pandemic forced them to understand, what I think we were all reluctant to experiment with, was people are as productive at home, if not more productive in some cases, than they are in the work at the office because they don't have a commute. And they tend to work more hours because they don't have a separation between I'm at work or I'm not at work. And I think companies have realized that now, and the fear of, you know, productivity dropping off a cliff. So as an industry, we got to look at what does that mean? Well, first of all, it means that you won't have these large offices that have, you know, all the equipment located in one location or 20 locations or 50 locations. A large entity now might have 25,000 locations because everybody's home is a location for that entity. And as an asset disposition provider, you know, we're going to have to adapt to that new dynamic. It also means that, you know, their data centers, if they decide to get rid of the big office on the 30th floor high rise, they may start to go away from owning their data center. A lot of companies have already made this decision in outsourcing that activity. So we may see even more consolidation in the data center space. And that's happened, you know, you're in this business, you know, that's happened tremendously already.
Right.
But it may get accelerated with this shift. And then we have, you know, the entire shift that might come through 5G and the transition of the industry where their, you know, data access becomes completely remote. And your ability to do things remotely, you know, I always think about it, you know, just think it would have been like traveling 40 years ago on business. You know, once you got done at the end of the day and nobody was to make a phone call, you'd be basically done. Today, everybody travels and they sit down, they flip on their computer and they work all night. You know, it's changed dramatically because you can work anywhere, anytime. You can have access to data anywhere, anytime. And, you know, we have to look at, you know, what does that mean for the transition of devices? You know, to me, the holy grail of devices is to carry something in my pocket that is powerful enough that, and we've seen some demonstrations of this, that when I go to a hotel room, they have something, I just drop it on the desk and they got a keyboard and a monitor there, and my device hooks up to that keyboard and monitor, and I feel like I'm just sitting at my desk at home.
Wow.
And, you know, if I'm in a cabin somewhere, I just set it there and it connects. And we're very, very close to that technology. The limiter is really not computing power that we're putting into the phones. The phone I carry around today has as big a storage as my, Surface Pro does, and has a very powerful processor in it. And, you know, the problem is video driver technology. It really can't drive a monitor with high resolution, especially wirelessly, but that is coming. And I think we'll be transitioning devices to meet this new paradigm, especially in the corporate space where, you know, as connectivity gets greater, the ability to do, dumb terminals or edge computing becomes more and more stable. And, you know, you're not required to have, you know, everything in the device. You're interacting with the corporate infrastructure through your device, and you can do that anywhere, anytime. We can work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Won't that be great?
Yeah. Well, and then now you have texting too, right? So anybody can reach anybody in a matter of a second, yeah. Right? So, well, hey, I really want to thank you for your time today and, all the information that you've given our listeners, and you've definitely on the forefront, and we appreciate everything that you've had to say. Is there anything more that you wanted to add that you think we've missed?
No, this was very thrilled. I appreciate the time. Obviously, something I'm passionate about, this industry is in my blood, so always enjoy talking about it.
And don't forget, the best way to support ITAD content is to rate and like the show on iTunes, Google, Spotify, or anywhere you might listen.